You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
This episode is brought to you by Redfin. You're listening to a podcast, which means you're probably multitasking. Maybe even scrolling home listings on Redfin, saving homes without expecting to get them. But Redfin isn't just built for endless browsing. It's built to help you find and own a home. With agents who close twice as many deals, when you find the one, you've got a real shot at getting it. Get started at redfin.com. Own the dream.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. Stop waiting around for the perfect candidate. Instead, use Indeed-sponsored jobs to find the right people with the right skills fast. It's a simple way to make sure your listing is the first candidate see. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs have 4 times more applicants than non-sponsored jobs. So go build your dream team today with Indeed. Get a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Y'all can go to Destin with them tourists all around. I'll go to South Texas where my friends can be found. Lord, I know that's in Fort Alto.
All right, folks, this is the Deep in the Hunt of Texas podcast, your one-stop shop for all things outdoors. Today, our guest is Brandon Smith. If I had to classify Brandon, I would say he might be like the decathlete of all hunters. It just takes one little quick look at his Instagram page, and there's no shortage of different kind of game animals between, I don't know, it looks like there's an antelope behind you. I don't know if that's a deer horn. Yeah.
Yeah, I got another one in the living room from this year. Got it back quick.
I mean, do you just do it all? Like, what don't you hunt? That might be if we go through that, this might be a 2-minute conversation. We're going to be done here. So,
man, honestly, anything, like, I'm game for anything. Like, I literally was bored last weekend. Buddy and I went squirrel hunting. You know, whatever's in season that I can get my hands on, you know, I'm definitely going to try and go after it.
Dude, it's funny you say that. So, you know how Texas Parks and Wildlife, they put out like the draw hunts and everything like that. And you can, you know, a myriad of different, you know, and, I mean, it's all the way from white-tailed deer to the one bighorn sheep they shoot in the state of Texas all year. I've donated, as I call it, quite a bit of money to Texas Parks and Wildlife over the years. And I've drawn on a couple duck hunts, but, this year I put in for I thought I was putting in for like a quail or pheasant hunt because it had upland game. And right. The first one was a quail pheasant hunt. And I was like, yeah, of course I want to do that.
For sure.
And I just started putting in for all the upland games. And, you know, I get this notification like, hey, you've drawn out for upland game. And I'm like, dude, sick. Like, I drew out for a quail hunt. I drew out for a pheasant hunt up in the panhandle, something. And I log in and it goes, Trinity Wildlife Management Unit, squirrel hunt. And I'm like, oh, you gotta be shitting me, dude.
My boss literally got the same thing, but down in like, down around Houston. Mm-hmm. So yeah, he definitely didn't make the trip for that one.
I was so excited too. I was like, dude, I finally drew out one of these cool hunts. Cause I've drawn a couple duck hunts.
Yeah.
But never anything of like real significance. And, dude, I was jacked. And I have the worst luck with tag draws too, because I,
same.
When I lived in Utah, I guess they have the Western Hunt Expo, and they, do like, it's separate from like the state draw tags. You basically same thing. You put in, it's like $10 a tag. And this is my first year living in Utah. And I put in for like every archery elk and mule deer, every rifle elk and mule deer, put in for moose, antelope, all the, I mean, I probably put in for 70, 80 tags. Like I put in, you know, donated some more money to the Utah wildlife, whatever they call it up there. And I put in for one turkey tag. And same thing, I get an email notification, you have drawn. And I'm like, dude, I've been in Utah a year. I didn't have to accrue points. I'm like not even a resident at this point. I had to show my water bill to verify that they would let me draw for the tags. And I open up the email. I'm like, dude, hell yeah. Like, I'm like going crazy and open it up, turkey hunt. And I'm like, you've got kidding me, dude.
Yeah, they had to throw you something.
And it was like in the mountains, like second week of April. And if, I don't know if you've ever done like been in the Rocky Mountains in April. It's like not a pleasant place because half the time it's not snowing. It's like 34 degrees and just pouring down rain. It's just miserable. I was like, yeah, dude, zero shot. Yeah. I'm going on that hunt. But
yeah, the that Western stuff, it's man, it's a lot to take in. I went probably, I guess it was 2 years ago now. I had a buddy, Drew, New Mexico, two times in a row. So second go around, three of us went. Me and my other buddy, Brett. We didn't draw a tag, so we just bought over-the-counter bear tags. I think it was like $350. So we're like, okay, we're going to at least, you know, try to hunt something. I think it's like a 9% draw rate out there. And they've got that lottery system. So you're pretty much on a level playing field with the actual residents. But it's super tough to draw. I'm going to put it in for it again this year. We've been putting in for Wyoming, building points. So. Yeah, it's awesome out there. We just took the bows. You can take rifle and, you know, shoot a lot of black bear in different units with rifle. You know, we went full blown stick and string and battled it out, but a lot of learning out there.
Dude, that's a different game too when you're just taking the stick and string too. Like on the proficiency of stalking you have to have is just it's just different.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we got in within 60 yards of two younger bulls. I think they were both like 5x5s. But you know, still a shooter, you know, you're all the way out there, and I mean, even though you're 60 yards, I mean, sometimes you just don't have a shot, and
but do you got to get the bow back? That's the thing. Half the time is
when they're looking at you. I mean, it's crazy. It's like some of that stuff that we hiked up to get there. I mean, we were hiking like 5 miles up every day, 5 miles back down. We were hiking all around, but I mean, it's just crazy that those things can cover ground like that, and then they're gone and. In an instant. That was the first time I heard one, an elk, like actually bark. And when it did it, like 50 yards away, scared the shit out of me. Like I was not expecting that at all. So I was like, okay, that's what that is now. So yeah. Learn lots of stuff out there.
And it's funny too, because you say like 60 yard shot, and like everyone's initial reaction is like, dude, 60 yard shot elk hunting, like, dude, I'm ripping that 10 times out of 10. And dude, I can go stand in my backyard. You know, I can put it pretty, you know, I'm not the best shooter in the world, but I can do decent groups at 60. But then you don't factor in like my legs are shot, my arms are shot.
Right.
My every little drop of adrenaline in my brain has dumped out. And I'm shaking and I'm holding on to this bow like I'm coming out of shoot number three. And it's, you know, it's not just like standing in the driveway looking down at shooting at a target. It's a totally different animal.
Sure. I mean, and you're standing there with you know, your pack on, and we'd have to, you know, you got to carry water with you everywhere you go. Cause I think the first 4 days we did like 35 miles and then we quit counting like our miles. So like, okay, this is ridiculous. But I mean, yeah, it's something I definitely want to try to do every year. But it, I mean, it's a whole new world that, you know, I haven't even unlocked yet. So
me and you both
keep applying. That's all you can do.
Pretty naive to it, unless I want to go, you know, spend $6,000 on a guided hunt, which I don't think I want to do either. So
yeah, that's one thing. I don't have it. I can't, you know, if I did, I would.
I get it, dude. I get it. I bought a house 2 years ago and that with that went all my out of state hunting money too. So
yeah, feel that.
Or you could just be like my brother who, you know, hardly ever hunts when he's in Texas and then gets invited to elk hunts for work. And he's just like, yeah, I went out for like 2 days, shot a bull, got it back. I'm just like, you're a dick.
He's like, yeah, it's cool. You know?
Yeah. I was like, you're a dick, but
yeah.
Well, I want to backtrack a little bit. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you from? I kind of want to hear your story. It's kind of funny because like I've hunted with like probably 5-10 people, you know, but I don't think we've ever like duck hunted together or anything like that. So I feel like we've been like, I know we've met, but it's been very like adjacent to like, you know, I've hunted with
in the shadows across, you know, across the exactly. lake or something. You know?
But yeah, I've hunted with the Webs, obviously Trey, Chance Cockrell. You know, so it's kind of funny how, you know, they say Texas is a big state, but it's really not.
So,
I mean, tell us how you kind of got into hunting, where you're from, like, tell us about Brandon Smith.
So, I guess, when I was little, I've never had a deer lease or anything like that. So I got a, you know, Daisy BB gun. My parents can tell you, I mean, we had the cops called on us, one morning because I was over shooting birds out of the trees, you know, before the school bus came, and lo and behold, the cop showed up. Someone called, said I had a gun, you know, I'm like 6 years old. Anyway, fast forward, I think I got my first shotgun when I was 10, and my dad wanted to get into hunting, but, you know, he was kind of just like, let's just get what we need and try to go. So I think we went the first full year without even shooting a duck. Second year, you know, we were a little more successful. And then as a kid back then, all you did was watch YouTube videos. So watched a bunch of YouTube videos. I had buddies, you know, that they got a deer lease. They go and hunt here at their place, whatever. I was like, okay, well, you know, how can I go hunt? So I started looking up public lakes, any public land around here. There's public land, but there's not a whole lot. As you know,
public land situation Texas lakes, up here stinks. Yeah. Like it's
yeah, awful. And I mean they get super crowded, you know. And so yeah, as soon as I pretty much turned 16, I just hunted every chance I could. It helped. I had a duck boat for, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, and I ran that thing through hell and back, you know, Lake Louisville, Ray Roberts. Went to college. I went to Tarleton State down there in Stephenville. Of course, the boat followed me there, and, you know, we went and hunted Proctor and, you know, knocked on doors and dairy farms and... So, yeah, just kind of got my in like that and, you know, just figured out, you know, how to do it, practice. I'm not, you know, the best at it, but I think I'm pretty decent at it for
watching some YouTube. I know, your Instagram would say you're pretty damn good. So, I would give yourself a little credit there.
The whole deer hunting thing. Love duck hunting. It's probably one of my favorite things to do, but yeah, there's just something different about, you know, hunting a specific animal you know, like a deer, whatever. I didn't shoot my first deer until I think like my sophomore year of college. My buddy Sam had taken me after an unsuccessful duck hunt to shoot a doe. And then it just, you know, tumbled from there. And I was like, okay, this is what I can get into, you know. But I mean, yeah, just snowballing from there. I haven't hunted a whole lot of places, but I mean, Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma. I haven't really gone any further than that yet. I look forward to, but
I mean, yeah, if you look, you know, say you lived in like Ohio, you stack up Texas, New Mexico, and Oklahoma. That's like 15 states over there. I mean, that's like the entire Northeast and Southeast all combined in one.
Yeah.
I do think it's kind of cool because I'm kind of the same way as you, where I kind of had this organic start in hunting where my dad was like a hardcore fisherman, like hardcore, like me at like 4 or 5 years old, like dragging me out in cold boats when it's like 35 degrees, or he liked to trout fish too. And we go up to Branson and stuff like that. And we're just like going through these marshes, and it's to free, and even up in Colorado, just freezing my ass off. And I kind of had the same thing where I you know, I'm a little older than you, and it wasn't YouTube for me. It was starting like on the old TV shows like OLN with Bill Dance and all that.
Right. Yeah.
And then I same thing as you, is I had a BB gun and we'd go shoot little, you know, chi-chi birds or whatever off the trees. And then eventually I was like 11 or 12 and I got a bow. I never did anything with it, but I had a bow for a little bit. And then, you know, got into college, did the whole duck hunting thing. And I think, you know, I know you said it's different, but I had somebody describe it to me this way, and I think it's the best way I've ever had it put to me, because obviously I love duck hunting and I love deer hunting too, but they're so, it's a different, like you said, it's a different kind of feeling where duck hunting is like, it's called type one fun, where like, dude, when you're shooting ducks, like it's so much fun and you're in them thick. Like it is the most fun you can have when they're just like hitting the decoys like nobody's business and doing it right. And then, but deer hunting, like, dude, you can go through the doldrums a little bit with deer hunting. Like you can make yourself go mad. And you know, in the moment, I mean, I've had some miserable deer hunts and some miserable deer seasons, honestly. And I'm just like, then finally you pull it off and the stars align. You're like, all right, well, I guess I could go do that again. And just kind of makes it all worth it.
Yeah.
That one moment. So it's funny that you kind of brought up the differences between the two.
Yeah. Cause, you know, anyone, if you offer someone, hey, you want to go duck hunt? You know, most of the time they're going to say yes, unless they don't like the cold. And I had a bunch of buddies in high school, and they never really, you know, duck hunted much. And so we'd go, and I mean, they'd all love it. You know, you can talk pretty loud, I guess, you know, and just hush up when you see birds coming, call at them, whatever. I mean, so you can be normal. You can take a lot of friends with you. You know, and have a good time with a bunch of people. Whereas, you know, deer hunting, you're most of the time you're by yourself or maybe with another guy. So it's a little more, I don't know. Not that it means more. It's just, there's a lot more that goes into it. I think it's kind of hard to explain, but I know you probably know.
Yeah,
what
it's the journey, you know, not the destination, where it's like, it's like you get that big dopamine hit from shooting a deer, and then, but the dopamine, it's not, well, I saw some podcast, which I would listen to way to be a podcast. It's like the dopamine is supposed to mean like the pursuit of the object or the goal.
Yeah.
Is that's what's supposed to be like the reward, not just like the actual reward. It's, you know, to your point, I think it's really hard to, you know, try and compare the two, because they're almost, you know, it's two totally different feelings. Now, I will say this year. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, yeah, you can look back and be like, oh, yeah, you remember that hunt? You know, we shot like a four man of, you know, green heads or whatever. Mm-hmm. Well, you kind of forget about it. You know, you remember the hunt and everything, you know, you shot 20 ducks or five ducks, whatever. And then it's like you roll on to the next time, you know, and kill more ducks, more ducks, more ducks. And then, you know, you got a deer hanging on your wall or something. And, you know, I can tell you when it was, how it went down, you know, how long I'd been watching the deer for, so on and so forth. And I can just replay those images in my head a lot better than trying to remember, you know, a duck hunt where we did pretty good like 4 or 5 years ago, you know.
For sure.
So the stories, you know, hold a lot more value and stuff when you look up on your wall. It's one of my favorite things.
Well, I think, you know, you say that though, but dude, I don't know about you, but after this year, I think I might have some duck hunts that might hold some value next year. Cause dude,
no
we
kidding.
Could not find
the
ducks.
Yeah.
It was awful. Like, I mean,
terrible.
I, you know, there's one time on a neighbor's pond, I saw a like actual, like lot of birds and that was it. I mean, dude, I used to think I was like the duck hunting guy. Like I was on pro staff for a little bit of the company. I mean, dude, we were going out. It's like, if we didn't shoot like a six man, we were like, oh, this hunt kind of sucked. And, you know, we'd shoot 20 birds and between six guys and be like, oh, this was kind of slow. And dude, it is, I went the last weekend when we got that cold snap and dude, we went and scouted the pond. There weren't a ton of birds on there. There's probably 80, 90 birds on one of the ponds we hunt. I'm like, okay, that's enough to hunt. Like just have a decent little shoot and hope they don't come at the same time. And this was just like a culmination of how duck season was, is we pull up to the spot Sunday morning and the entire pond is frozen over except this one little spot. And dude, there's like 150 birds just keeping this one little spot open. We pull up, they all fly off.
Gosh.
And none of them come back. Not a single one. And I'm like, dude, that's the way duck season is gone. And I don't know if you've like been keeping up with the news, but it's like the hot topic right now.
I've seen
it. As far
it,
as like
everywhere.
Like ducks not migrating.
Yeah, and, I think it's like, gotten to that point. Like, yeah, people are gonna voice their opinion. It seems like more people now than ever have been, which I think is good, but. Don't know how it's going to get fixed.
Yeah, I guess who's that senator from Louisiana? It's I said Tim Kennedy on another podcast, but that's not it. It's John Kennedy.
I saw that.
And it's like, I guess, and it makes a good point. Like, you know, it's like the old saying, the rich man floods the corn and the poor man corns the flood.
Yeah.
And it's you know, not that we're condoning that, for the record. Allegedly the poor man corns the flood. But it's, you know, what's the difference? I mean, intrinsically, plus it's, and I saw Tony Vandermore, who, you know, I have all the respect in the world for, but he tried to make a correlation between like corn production through like the Midwest, between like Missouri, Iowa, Kansas, South Dakota, whatever. Really has stayed stagnant over the last 20 years. And I'm like, okay, yes, but like there are so many operations now that are built and farmed strictly to hold ducks that I don't think it like tells the whole story. And it's really like, I think it's hurt the migration as a whole. I mean, you got people who are flooding, you know, tens of thousands of acres just strictly to hold ducks. I mean, you don't even have to farm to make the money on it, because you can grow all that corn, have the government subsidize it for you, and then you know, have outfitter A come pay you more than the corn's worth to come hunt it for, you know, the next year. And it's like, I don't know how you solve it. And I guess Ducks Unlimited keeps saying that numbers are up and whatnot. look, I'm not a biologist. This is just anecdotal evidence of me hunting in, you know, two or three counties in Texas and maybe a little bit on the coast as well. But I'm calling chicken shit.
Yeah, no doubt.
The ducks are not what they used to be. I don't care what the studies say or the surveys say. I don't know if the flyways are shifting or what, but it's just not what it used to be. Even on, dude, I've burned them on public land. I go to public land, I see three ducks, and I'm like, hell yeah, good hunt.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just like back in the day when, you know, mojos were banned in Arkansas. I think they lifted it just, you know, within the past few years or something like that. I think it was sometime recent, but yeah, they're saying that, you know, it was an advantage. And I mean, what do you do? Do you look at ice eaters the same way now? I mean,
yeah.
I almost tried it out that same weekend we got that last front. I left my house at like 11 o'clock at night, drove out past Wichita Falls. Pond wasn't froze over yet. There was a bunch of birds using it, but we were going to shoot geese. And so, yeah, we set up in the field like 100 yards away, just giant wheat fields, two big ponds in the center. And yeah, I mean, pond was locked up as soon as we got there. And there was probably like three or four dozen groups of birds trying to work into that pond. And I mean, yeah, I thought about trying to bring a trolling motor out there with a battery, you know, and keep it going all night. But, you know, it was the last day. It was the only duck hunt, goose hunt, whatever I went on all year. But I mean, man, it's just rough when you don't even want to go out there and attempt. But yeah, I mean, with all the DU ponds, whatever, people planning more than ever, trying to hold birds. I mean, I think I'm with everybody else saying, yeah, it is stopping their migration as long as they have food, water, you know, open water. I mean, they're going to stay. I don't know really what the fix would be, because, I mean, if you want to do it as far south as you can, you know, that way they get a mindset like, hey, I know this DU pond every year in, you know, Kansas or Oklahoma or whatever has got stuff for me, and I can, you know, stay there year round and, or stay there for a long period of time. But yeah, I really don't even know. So I spent most of my time deer hunting this year, and yeah, I said to hell with it, put the shotgun up.
Hey, I don't believe it. Do you know what? Honestly, this is more DFW like specific, but you know what I think is kind of having an impact that nobody's going to talk about is all these damn development ponds, like yes, industrial ponds, like park ponds for like, dude. I mean, they're up in. Are you still? Where are you living now?
I'm out in Ponder. I'm like
in Ponder. Okay, so you're still
20 minutes from Denton, 20 from Decatur. Yeah,
dude, they're like what Hunter Ranch just sold, and they're putting in like 5,000 homes or something like that. They're gonna have to move. They're gonna have 40 ponds for that place.
Yeah, and a friend of mine, coworker's son, I think he's like 18, 19. He's a ranch hand out there, and he hunts all that stuff. And he's like, just I think the last year, it still wasn't the best year duck hunting, but I mean, this kid was just crushing them. Dude. Pictures and pictures. And I was like, he's hunting something special. And he's like, oh, yeah, it's up the Hunter Ranch. I was like, oh, yeah, that's why.
Makes sense. But it's all going to go away. And even like the dude where I live off of kind of like by the speedway. Dude, you got so many like industrial warehouse spaces. And I work in distribution. Dude, they all have these ponds. And I drove by one, you know, and it had probably 100 ducks on it. And I'm like, okay, that's why there's no damn ducks on the places we can actually hunt. They just go out to the landfill pond and just hang out and know that nothing bad's going to happen to them.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Said, I'm going to have to get real creative because I don't know like, oh, I just almost fell on my chair. I'm gonna have to get creative. Like, I don't know. I was thinking, like, dude, I'm just not gonna duck hunt next year, and I'm just gonna corn the living shit out of every pond out at our ranch.
Yeah,
and just not
might
hunt
as well
and just
be a photographer. You know?
Yeah, dude, I'm just not gonna hunt for a year because I know people. I guess they call it imprinting, and like as soon as duck season is over, they will just dump corn in all their ponds. Just
I've
and
heard
I guess
that.
Then I mean, I look, it's legal. I'm not saying, you know, I guess it definitely toes the line a little bit, but
right.
I don't know. I got to do something because this sucks going duck hunting in negative 10 degree wind chill and not shooting a damn bird. Like, it's
yeah
awful.
Yeah. And I always said, whenever I got close to kicking the bucket, you know, when I'm a old grandpa one day, I'm just going to go hunt the city park, you know, and that's going to be my
go hunt Lake Park
way out, you know. Yeah,
dude, when I worked at Lake Park in college, I tried so hard, like over like Christmas and Thanksgiving, or not Thanksgiving but really Christmas, you're like, dude, golf course not open, like let me go hunt out there, like it's core right. land, I have my Louisville permit, like this is legally I can go do this, I just need permission from you guys.
Yeah.
And they're like, and my boss is like, no, it's a liability and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, dude, whatever. Like,
you say, I already got a waiver printed out. I just need you to sign it.
Hand it. I know you mentioned door knocking in college. Did you have like good luck doing that? Cause, dude, I tried doing it up in Denton when I was in college and I had zero luck. People just, you know, gave me the biggest stink eye.
Yeah. I mean, no, we didn't have like the absolute best luck. You know, you'd get lucky, like we would try and go like pretty far out, you know, to the stuff that wasn't as obvious. We got a dairy farm that we hunted and we just talked to the cow guy and, you know, we asked him, hey, could we pay you like $100 or whatever, you know, we'd all get some money together. And I mean, the dude actually didn't even want the money. He was just like, yeah, y'all come whenever y'all want. Just, you know, shut the gate. There might be cows out there. That was out in like Glen Rose area. But yeah, I mean, we didn't have a whole lot of luck. Probably one of the coolest ones was actually back here before I went to college. I was still in high school. I was like 15. And you know that that ski lake over there off of Swisher?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was 15, one of my buddies, one of his cousins was like 17, whatever. He could drive. So we drove up to that guy's front door, which is a good 200 yards off the road. And we're kind of just like, hey, man, you know, there's a lot of ducks over here. Back then, you know, you probably saw it back then. There was probably 500-600 ducks that just sat up there by the road. And guy was like, ducks? Y'all just want to shoot ducks? Like, yes, sir. Like, that's it. We'll help you do anything you need, like help around here, just anything. He goes, yeah, come back tomorrow. Bring your friends, go hunt. So we started hunting it. And that first day we hunted it, we killed a bunch of birds and ran out of shells. Went, knocked on his door, told him thank you. And he handed us like $200 and said, go get breakfast and more shells and come back tomorrow. So we ended up hunting that place for, I don't know, like 5 years or so. And I mean, that place was awesome, but it progressively got worse. You had to hunt it at certain times, you know, to be real successful. So it took a lot of time scouting and stuff. And when I went to college, I'd come back and try to hunt it. There'd be some kids sneaking in the very back trying to hunt, didn't have permission. You know, I just quit going out there. I didn't I wasn't about all that stuff anymore.
Dude,
it's pretty hard.
I don't get the whole like sneaking out, like trying to trespass to shoot a couple ducks. Like I just, not saying I like obviously don't condone any kind of like deer poaching or anything like that, but like, you know, I can see how the big buck craze, like I can see how step A to B to C gets you all the way to Z.
Yeah, it's got to be worth it like, for those kind of people. You know?
Like I can see how you can go because, you know, I've had big deer that I've like gone insane on, like leaving work early, like crazy stuff, just like canceling family plans. Like I need to go hunt. So I can see how the madness could drive you there. But like to go shoot like four or five ducks, like, dude, that is no felony in the world is worth shooting any amount of ducks, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. We've one time in college, we had scouted. It was my first time ever going to public land hunt, one of the lakes up there. And we had scouted this spot, and I was with a bunch. I was a freshman, and I met a bunch of buddies on the fishing team. They were all seniors. And so we went duck hunting or whatever, scouted, found a crap ton of birds, and we ended up getting there first. You know, that was back in the camping out days when everyone was camping out on the lake, you know, good old times,
dude. But it turns out those guys,
oh yeah, same year, turns out it was like a river with two coves on either side. So what we did was Walmart had these little they looked like light switches, you know, but they were magnetic, took a battery. So we knew there was going to be a bunch of people coming in there. And so we tied them up, put them on the point of that cove going in, and then one deep in the cove, like a few hundred yards away. And we sat there on the cove we wanted to hunt from probably 7 o'clock the night before till sunrise. I think we counted like 25 boats, most boats I've ever seen on such a small lake in my life. And it was genius. You know, they pull in and then they just turn around and leave. And I mean, we freaking crushed them, but yeah, good times out there.
Dude, I did that on Louisville of all places one time. Louisville is such a wild duck hunting thing because, like,
dude,
you could scout it and there'd be birds and you're hunting like 300 yards from like somebody's backyard and you're just tearing them up. And I'm like, dude, these people have to hate us. Like, we are absolutely ripping shotgun shells at 6:45 in the morning. And you know, I think a lot, the thing is too, is because of all these developments, I think there's a lot of spots like you just can't even straight up hunt anymore. Like all my Louisville spots, I can't hunt anymore.
Yeah. There's like no access. Developments.
It's an access unless you had a boat and wanted to like back into it. But then even then, like there's some of them where like you legally, I think it's 200 yards, 150. I think it's 200.
Yeah. It's like 500 feet, whatever that is in yardage, like 150 yards, yeah, so, something like that.
Give or take. So,
it's wild.
It's, you know, Denton County. Well, then too, there's other things too. Cause like, you know, Pilot Point and all that up there, that used to all be like peanut farms and now it's all sod. So it's not, you know, obviously ducks don't eat sod. I mean, there have been times where like I've come in after a big rain and I went to like scout. There's somebody's sod farm. Like, dude, there's probably 3,000, 4,000 ducks in the flooded sod farm. But the problem is the water's gone the next day.
Exactly.
So it's not like you, even if you get permission, there's no point. But
yeah,
kind of want to pivot here, move on to kind of like the deer hunting thing a little bit. Where are you deer hunting these days?
So the only spot I have to myself is 18 acres. I won't say exact. I can't say exactly where it's at.
I'll tell you after this.
But you know, you've hunted the lake before, so these deer are coming off core land, and it's crazy. It's almost like, I'm not going to say seek one because I'm not shooting them out of people's backyards. But I mean, they're 100% urban deer. I mean, they're wild, don't get me wrong, but I mean, we've got trail camera pictures 5 miles south of deer in velvet in the summer that we'll see during deer season. And I mapped it out. I mean, they're walking the edge of the lake, going behind, you know, developments to back up. They're crossing boat ramps. You know, there's tons of public access for fishing. So my side is like the most pressured side. I've got a buddy who hunts the whole opposite side of the creek. He's got way more than I do. Yeah, those deer, I mean, they're very smart. This year, had a deer show up that we saw 2 years ago. He showed up in like January and just big, wide, tall, kind of pencil horned. But he's kind of like a ghost and disappeared. Showed up last year. Kind of the same thing. He rolled in a couple times, and right as soon as I had him close to daylighting, he had gotten shot by my neighbor, and we thought he was gone. Like, he never found him. We know him, and never saw that deer again. So, you know, when the sand bass started running, you know, I went looking for him, figured he'd be dead along the creek somewhere, but couldn't find him. And then come bow season this year, he just randomly popped up, and he's never had deer come in October, like at least any mature bucks. He stayed around. And I'd hunt for 4 days after work. Like, my boss, I've got a super cool boss that, you know, he hunts a lot too. And he's like, "Hey, is that deer showing up?" I'm like, "Yeah, man, like every day." And he's like, "What time is it?" 4 o'clock, 4:30, whatever. He's like, "Man, go kill that deer." You know, I'd keep all my stuff in my work truck, you know, and I'd pull up to my buddy's house, his parents' house. And dad's pulling up the driveway, and I'm, you know, changing shirts, putting my clothes on, hurrying up to run into the woods. But yeah, fast forward, I finally saw him in person. I was sitting there and had a group of deer come in. They left, whatever. It was about to get dark, probably like 5 minutes left of shooting light. It was before the time change, and he came right over my right shoulder. I looked down, he's like 10 yards. I was like, "Okay, well, I'm going to stand up, just try and shoot him." So I go to stand up, and my legs are shaking. I'm like, gosh, I was like, he's just going to see me as soon as I draw back. He was comfortable. I let him go to the feeder, and all I could think about in my head was like 3 years of knowing about this deer, and I thought he was dead last year. And I have a feeder out there that they'll hit it, but it's my spot's more of a travel route. Luckily, he went to the feeder and he's sitting under it, facing away from me. I stand up and I'm like ready, like waiting for him to just, you know, quarter something. You know, I'm just looking at his tail. And, well, I'm standing for about 3 minutes. All of a sudden, my feeder goes off. And then, like, my heart sinks. I'm like, "Dude, why is my feeder going off at dark?" And yeah, that deer, I'm pretty sure by the time I got out of the stand, that deer was already in Oklahoma. But I mean, he's probably 150 inch deer. But I mean, the history is what made it. I was just so mad at myself. And it's just one of those things, you know, I'm like, all right, well, we'll see next year. But, I kept hunting hard. There's good deer out there. I mean, development's killing it. You know, the one thing out there is if you see a deer you like, you better kill it because you're never going to see him again, typically. Mm-hmm. Had a lot of big deer cruise through there that'll hang around for a little bit. Whenever the rut is about to kick off, you know, they come up the lake, come to check does, cruise around, and you got like a 2 to 3 week window where you're going to be most successful. And it's tough hunting. That's all I've got as far as hunting places. I've got some good buddies that, you know, they'll hit me up and, hey, let's go duck hunt. Hey, what are you doing this weekend? You know, let's go and mess around or deer hunt, whatever. And I went back to Stephenville. One of my best friends, Sam, he's got a ton of land out there. And I mean, he's got more deer out there than you can even shake a stick at. And he's killed plenty of big deer. And he's just like, oh, yeah. You know, you want deer hunt? Go deer hunt. So, I was lucky this year.
Those are good friends to always have.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, and he took me to shoot my first deer. So he kind of, you know, can blame him for it. But, that's all I've got. I'd love to get on a lease so I could, I like taking people, like, you know, taking buddies that don't really hunt a whole lot that want to just to try it, or they want to, you know, get into it. I love that's the aspect of hunting that I really do like. And hopefully later on down the road, a lease is in the future. Can take a lot of friends with me, you know, see them have fun, shoot their first deer, all that good stuff. But all comes with time and a little bit of money, of course.
For sure. I want to pick your brain about this property a little bit because I'm kind of fascinated by it because I don't know a ton of people that are hunting like these little urban sections. Is this 18 acres is what you said it was?
Mm-hmm.
Is it like wooded or half wooded? Like what kind of paint the picture for me a little bit.
Yeah, so it's probably got... It's less than half wooded, and half of it is a huge ridge. Tons of oak trees, right off a creek. And, it's not like, it's not prime deer hunting. It's, it's literally just a travel corridor, with some bedding areas. And, yeah, I got a feeder out there, but I mean, man, it's super hard to hunt, especially all the pressure it gets on that side. I get at least one homeless guy walking through there every year. and it kind of freaked me out when my buddy across the creek has a friend that also hunts, and he doesn't hunt a whole lot over there, you know. But he went to go grab his ladder stand at the end of deer season, and sitting up top was like a broken meth pipe, crack pipe, whatever. And,
getting up high to get high.
Oh, dude. And like, I was walking to my stand every morning, just as soon as I'd get up to where I could see it, I'd be looking up to make sure no one was, you know, slumped over in it. I was walking through there as quiet as I could, and I've got some thermal binoculars that, you know, I'd be walking like this and I'd trip over something because I'm too worried about, you know, see ahead.
Somebody beat up in the stand, dude.
Yeah, I think it was 2 years ago, the guy that hunts next to me, he was sitting in his tree stand. And there's like no access, you know, unless you walk all the way down this creek, you know, and this guy walked right under a stand, and he said, "Man, I was shaking, you know, didn't know what to do." So I just yelled at him. I was like, "Hey, the hell are you doing?" The guy, word for word, told him, "I'm a retired paramedic. I'm looking for the freeway." And he said, "Well, you're a hell of a long ways away from the freeway. So I'd suggest, you know, you get the hell out of here." And he said, dude just walked in the brush and disappeared. And I was like, man, never thought I'd have to deal with something like that.
Well, dude, it's just, there's so, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth's gotten so big. I mean, there's so many damn homeless people. I mean, in places you never thought there were. I mean, it's just, that's got to be weird. And I've even heard of people like going into duck hunt in January on public land. They'll find a guy like spotlighting deer, and it's like, dude, anyone who's out spotlighting deer, I'm like, dude, I don't want to run into him, because those are the kind of people that are stupid enough to shoot you over it.
Yeah. Have you ever seen one of those decoys that Texas Parks and Wildlife puts out?
Like, I haven't seen them. I've seen like videos of them, but I've never actually seen one out.
I saw one when I was on the Tarleton. We had a fishing team, and so we would travel, you know, state to state, whatever, fish. And my partner Tanner and I were going through Groesbeck and pulling the boat, you know. I mean, we're cooking. I mean, it's late at night. Yeah, I don't know if we were going to Arkansas or Sam Rayburn, what we were doing, but I look over to the right, and I mean, it's clear as day, a cut pipeline, and there's like 170-inch deer standing there. And I was like, I've hunted out here before. I was like, there's no way. I said, that's just too perfect. We crest over the hill, and maybe a half mile away, we saw some amber lights pulled off the side of the road. I was telling him, dude, let's turn around so we can get a picture. Like, turn around, let's get a picture. And he's like, all right, well, he goes, let's pass this car. And we kind of slow rolled this car. Yeah, it was a game warden truck sitting there, amber lights on. And I was like, "That's well, maybe funny. We shouldn't go back there. You know, we'll mess up their little investigation they got going on, or sting operation." But yeah, it was pretty crazy. I never thought I'd see one of those.
There's one guy, it's a different state. I guess they like, I don't know if, I think it was Georgia, but they're doing the same thing. And the guy actually turned around to spotlight it. And they arrested him for spotlighting.
Yeah.
But he didn't like pull a gun out. And I think he ended up suing the county and like won.
Damn.
And like nothing happened to it. But, you know, you start to get out to East. I know Groesbeck isn't like super East Texas, but you know, you start to get around 45 into East Texas. I mean, that's road hunting capital of the world right there.
That's prime. Yeah.
That is,
yeah,
the old,
you know,
the old Beeman Buck, as I've heard.
Yeah, the old, you know, East Texas, everyone kind of hates on them. You know, if it's brown, it's down. Some of the cheapest deer leases you can get on are out there. And, you know, there's reasons why, but I mean, that's just one of the great things about Texas being so diverse. You can hunt literally anywhere, and you know, everywhere's totally different. Yeah, it's funny out there.
Dude, East Texas,
once you get out that way.
Dude, and I've hunted out there quite a bit actually. Dude, it's just like totally, dude, there's so many damn people. One, there's so many damn people that hunt.
Yeah.
But dude, there are some bighorn deer out there though, for sure.
There are. Like, there are some.
I see some that get pulled out. They got little bitty bodies because they're eating pine straw. But they I've seen some pretty big horn deer get pulled out of there.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's also pretty. A lot of meth heads too. So
yeah. Yeah. A lot of those deer, they get those real dark brown kind of foreheads, and, you know, they got that. They're not like, yeah, they get chocolate horn deer out there, but they got, I don't know if it's because they rub on smaller pine trees and stuff out there, but, or pine trees and cedars, but they get like this yellowish, I don't know, weird tint to it. And yeah, they got some cool looking deer out there for sure. But I haven't really looked into it too much, but it's almost like Texas has, I'm no biologist, but I mean, so many subspecies of deer. I mean, it's, if I had to guess, probably Texas would, I think, would have the most. I mean, you take a deer from West Texas, East Texas, you know, Central Texas and North Texas. I mean, a lot of people could probably look at those deer and tell you where they came from. I mean, body size, antler color, you know. I mean, I just think it's cool how every single one of them is different. It's a lot different than just your old mallard duck, you know. They all kind of look the same.
Well, there's this thing where, and I've heard a lot of people talk about this, and I've seen it on forums where people brought in deer from out of state, like Illinois, Michigan. I talked about this with a guy from Iowa, Dan Johnson, and he, then I guess Michigan, and I've talked to other people too, where they brought him into like North Texas to like breed and kind of like repopulate in the in like the 80s and 90s. And like the deer I have in Montague County versus the deer on like my buddy's places in like East Texas, dude, it is like a different species of deer. I mean, East Texas, I mean, you look at the, you know, if y'all go look at my Instagram or even at the page Instagram, like the deer I shot was probably 190 pounds on the hoof, which for North Texas, pretty decent sized.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had pictures of him and he looked like the herd bull. Conversely, like, you know, you see some of these deer in East Texas and you're like, dude, I struggle. It's kind of funny. I struggle to age. I have buddies who have leases and land in East Texas. I struggle to age the deer there. Like I've had deer that I should have shot just because of body size. And they do the same thing up here. They come up to where I hunt and they're like, dude, that's like that is for sure a 4-year-old, 5-year-old deer. And I'm like, nah, it's not. And that same thing, I've let a couple deer walk in East Texas where I'm like, yeah, that's like, you know, 3-year-old, let them walk. And they're like, you know, you get game camera pictures the next day. They're like, what are you doing? Like shoot that damn deer. And I'm like, well, I was erring on the side of caution, I guess. But
you
are right.
Like, yeah, North Texas, you know, your average deer can go from, you know, 170 to 200 pounds, no problem. But, I mean, one of my best friends from college, AJ's from Fredericksburg, and, you know, we'd go back to, he's got like 150 acres out there. And
rabbit deer.
Yeah, dude, you go out there and hunt. I mean, these deer don't stand, but it seems like 3 feet off the ground and, you know, a big bodied buck out there, you know, it's like 150 pounds, a lot of 130 inch deer. I mean, it's just crazy. And the does, I mean, the does are tiny and you come back up here and, you know, a mature doe down there, you know, doesn't even weigh as much as a button buck up here. It's just crazy trying to age a deer, you know, and switching up the environment. Which another thing out there is he's got axis deer. And I mean, as soon as I saw one in person, I mean, I just like fell in love with him. I mean, I think it was sophomore year of college. He had guided on quite a bit of game ranches down there. You know, I'm sure you know. I mean, it's crazy. Full of exotics. So he needed some help and was like, hey, would you want to come help me? And my buddy Hayden Schneider, he's living down there too, you know, come help guide some hunts, sell some hunts. And so I did. And the biggest thing was had to learn how to, you know, age an axis deer. And I mean, you get into the first time I heard caudals, I was like, what the hell are you talking about? And, you know, those suckers are they're probably like the coolest animal, I think, in Texas. Just from how big they get, you know, they're more of like a grazer instead of a browser, like a whitetail. You know, they'll push some whitetail out. They'll be more dominant. You can shoot them at night. Like, we had felt weird, but yeah, we had taken some clients out at night, you know, before the thermal game got big. You know, we were flashing with green lights and like, yeah, that's him, kill him. And, you know, it felt wrong, but, I mean, yeah, I was fortunate enough to shoot one down there at his place. And I mean, hands down, like one of the best things I've ever eaten. I mean, their capes are awesome. They just look cool.
Make good rugs.
Oh yeah, for sure. And being in college, you know, your buddy tells you, hey, you want to come make some money and, you know, go look at a bunch of axis deer and, oh, there's a mouflon. Oh, there's a black buck. You're just like, what? You know, I'm just from North Texas. You know, we got pigs and they don't have pigs down there in Fredericksburg either at his house. And it's crazy because you go across the bridge and in Llano and they're everywhere. But, yeah, back in the day before they gained popularity, a lot of the guys out there, the farmers, whatever, they would shoot them like a pig. These old men were talking about they'd shoot them in the stomach with 22s just so they'd run off and die and, you know, quit eating out of their fields and, you know, being a burden. And then we were selling 28 inch and below axis for $12.50, and then 33 inches and above, they were like $3,000 or $3,500, and you know, whatever in between was whatever.
Dude, sign me up for them 38 and below hunts.
Dude, yeah, and you know, it was nuts, and just the way their market's taken off. You know, now it's like minimum $5,000 to go shoot one. Does, you know, it's selling for like $300. Now you can't even get a doe hunt for like $800. I mean, it's insane. And that freeze really, really kicked it off, with that big kill they had.
Oh, 2021.
Yeah. And also those, you know, exotic trappers. I mean, there's guys getting in big trouble all the time. They're trapping axis and black buck, you name it. They're trapping it. And they're not just trapping like one or two. I mean, they're trapping a whole herd of them, like 30, 40. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're selling them. And, you know, it's just, yeah, they're not native. But, I mean, man, they're just depleting them out there. But, yeah, it's a crazy world out there.
It's cool to have, like, it's cool to have, like, because, like, Texas is, like, one of the only climates that a lot of these animals can survive outside of, like, their natural, you know, natural environment. And just, you know, how their axis have thrived, even, like, on low fence, like the Nilgai in South Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, when we do get those freak cold snaps, they definitely struggle. But you are right. It's gotten, dude, I shot a buck this year. I didn't shoot a doe. I tried to put two deer in the freezer, regardless of how I cut it. And I posted on a Facebook page. It was like, hey, like, does anyone just have like a meat hunt MLDP? Like, it's late in the season. And I'm thinking like, okay, somebody might have like a broke buck, orings for cheap, or just like, or, you know, an axis doe. Dude, they wanted $500 for a whitetail doe. And like you said, like $800-$900 for an axis doe. And I'm like, bro, get lost, dog. Like, I'm paying $200 max for a whitetail doe management hunt. Like, especially this late in the season too.
And down there in Fredericksburg, you know, they would almost have to force themselves to shoot whitetail just because, I mean, they're a German family. I mean, their house was built, I can't remember, like the 1700s or 1800s, you know, they've got a whole lot of history in there. One cool thing I will say is in their barn, they've got these little hidey holes cut out, And my buddy's dad was like, oh yeah, that's where, you know, they fought the Indians out of and all that stuff. And, you know, arrowheads out there. It's a wild place for sure. If it wasn't so expensive, I'd try to move down there and hunt a whole lot more.
It ain't like it once was. You know, it's all coveted land down there, especially as Austin gets bigger, for sure. All those people getting their second homes out there. But tell me about college. I know you fished in college, and that's a world I'm totally blind to. Like, do you still competitively fish at all now? Like, what's kind of the landscape on that as far as what you're doing in the spring?
Yeah, so in college, Tarleton had a smaller bass club. We weren't funded at all. We had to either come up with the money ourselves. And I mean, when there was a tournament in Tennessee or Arkansas, you know, or even Toledo Bend, you know, it was straight out of our pocket. And I think we had like one tournament or two club tournaments a year that were local, where we'd fish against each other, and the top two teams would get help with, you know, gas money and a hotel. But I mean, it was fun. It was small. You know, I met a bunch of good friends. I got one of my buddies, Sporty. He works for Skeeter out there in East Texas. And Cody Ebear, he was a big part of it too. He's fishing the Elite Series. He's had a great career with FLW, MLF, and now the Elite Series. And it's just gained such a traction now. We didn't have it in high school. When I graduated, I tried to. Didn't happen. But the whole fishing deal, it's like as soon as, for me, hunting season's over, you know, I'm fishing. And I've taken a break kind of like the last, let's say, year and a half or so, 2 years. It was pretty much every weekend, if not every other weekend. We were traveling to Cedar Creek or Ray Roberts, PK, to pre-fish, and then lake goes off limits for a week, and then you go back the next week to fish the tournament. And the entry fees on those, they're probably like $350. You know, split with your partner it's not that bad. But first place minimum, I think, is 15 grand. But, you know, say you wear Costa sunglasses, you can sign up for their little deal. It's like $50. You pay, and the highest placing finisher gets an extra $500,000. Same goes with boat brands, rods, you name it. Garmin, they have a big bonus deal out there. So I think it was last year I just jumped in with a buddy, you know. I was like, man, I haven't fished in a while. Yeah, let's go. No practice. We just jumped in the tournament. Around my buddies all day that actually ended up winning it. I think they had 34 pounds, something like that. It's one day of fishing. It's not a 2 day deal. You know, biggest bag takes it all. And I think they tallied up like Phoenix bonus bucks, Fun and Sun Fly the Fish, Garmin. I mean, they made it out of there with like 35 grand in a day of fishing. I mean, that's just insane.
Ooh.
And I think we finished 19th and we caught like 20 pounds and I think we got $1,000. But I mean, yeah, I mean, it's just, you get out there, you go fish, and yeah, you get a chance at big money. And it's fun time, you know, get Airbnbs with all the boys, talk fishing, rig tackle. You know, it's like taking multiple vacations a year, but it's, you know, just on the weekends fishing with your buddies.
Dude, those are the best vacations. Those are the only vacations I want. Hunting and fishing vacations. That's what I tell people. It's like, you want to go on this vacation? Am I hunting? Am I fishing? Am I playing golf? And in some way, are we going to work those? If those three are not on the agenda, I'm not interested.
Yeah. And a few years ago, I went to Colorado. Never, you know, I've fly fished here. I mean, it's not real fly fishing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I got a fly rod, I think when I was like 10. And, you know, I'd go to like the Corinth pond and I'd catch 100 bluegill a day before I could leave the pond, you know, every day after school. And so when it's Colorado, obviously I couldn't bring a whole lot of crap. Hannah, my fiance, her aunt was living up there. And so we stayed with her. They were going to go do whatever. And I was like, hey, take me by this fly fishing shop. And they rent out waders and fly fishing rods. I was like, I'm going to go rent some shit real quick. And then, you know, quick Google map search. This looks good. Drop me off here. Just behind some like school or something on the river. And, you know, people probably thought I was a weirdo walking through the school parking lot, some elementary school. And I jump in the river and I caught some pretty nice brown trout. I mean, it was loaded up and I mean, it was badass. I mean, I want to go do it again, but, yeah, it's a whole lot of different stuff up there. I know little to nothing, but I mean, if there's fish in there, yeah, I don't know how to catch them that great, but I'm going to go rent some stuff and try it out. So.
Heck yeah. That's what it's all about. Well, I want to get you out of here pretty quickly, but I want to ask you one last thing. This has kind of become my staple question here. What is the best Tex-Mex up around Ponder?
Dude. Tex-Mex around Ponder. Well, you probably have to go like past Decatur, I guess, to, was it Casa Torres up there?
Casa Torres, bro, come on, we can do better than Casa Torres.
I don't go that way much to eat, you know.
I mean, you don't have to be saying it. I'm not trying to shit on Casa Torres. I know a lot of the kids.
Or Crum, we're like, closer to Crum. Miguelito's is good.
Sorry, I don't mean if there's any Casa Torres stands on here. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
Miguelito's.
Yeah, Miguelito's goes hard. I'll retract my Casa Torres comment.
I'm a spicy Mexico guy. If you're ever in Bowie,
yeah,
dude, spicy Mexico, hell of a name too. You know, they didn't think about it much, but dude, that might be my favorite restaurant in the world.
Yeah,
it's just the vibes are right. But Brandon, I appreciate you coming on. He is the all around outdoorsman of Texas. He's the hunting, fishing decathlete. He's like Bruce Jenner, except he still has his pecker and then wore dresses.
Yeah.
Before, you know, before he cut it off. So Brandon, I appreciate it. And hopefully we can get some hunts in together next year.
Yeah, for sure. Just a phone call away.
Absolutely. I'll holler at you later.
All right. See ya.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
The savings are stacked at Sleep Outfitters. Right now, save up to $800 store-wide on top brands you know and trust. Plus, buy one, get one free deals so you can upgrade sleep for your entire family. And get a free adjustable base with select mattress purchases. With 0% interest financing and free delivery available, getting better sleep has never been easier. And with our exclusive lifetime price guarantee, you'll always know you got the best deal. Save big today at Sleep Outfitters. Visit sleepoutfitters.com or a location near you.
Are you looking for a Columbus car dealership built on tradition and trust? Buyers Auto, family-owned since 1897, offers top new and pre-owned vehicles. Visit us or shop online at buyersauto.com. Buyers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.